How do you put the entire unit equals?
How don't?
If I just want floats, the entire vehicles, I don't know.
Is it as it look?
Float? I have some marvelous.
The word float, yep.
Marvelous calamari.
Easy. Was it good?
That was pretty iffy on that calamari.
I'm always iffy on calamari that like has like with the fried coating. Sometimes it's so heavy.
Pom pom.
Feast
today. Have you ever seen Dead Poets Society?
Yes, I've had something happen.
Yes. Why don't we have that kind of communication style in within Possum? When Brian asks a question, you say, "Oh, Captain, my Captain."
You're welcome to do it.
Yes, we are, man. Implement.
Can you, next time you display a possum image, do so with a mighty yacht?
Oops, that's gone over there. Goodbye.
Let's see. For Fornix Craig, what is a reasonable maximum fine?
A couple hundred.
Right. 200, 55, and a half.
Beauty, look at that. That's a nice block. Good job, mate.
Type, uniform, fitting LCM, yes.
That's a weird distribution, actually. How wide is MVSS being? Like 45 arc second-ish? That sounds right.
MVSS?
Yeah. So if we have two Gaussian blobs, one of them's like 45 arc seconds, the other's like 20 arc seconds, then we should expect a match within like 60 arc seconds, if they're the same object at the same frequency. So they were all probably real matches up to about there.
That sounds good.
Sounds good.
Oh no. Cutting the headers. You didn't warn me there was some. But that's actually fine for. For the history, there's nothing.
Oh, there'll be some funkiness out.
Oh,
don't worry.
Oh no. Why is it complaining about non UTF-8 code starting with slash XV9? What does that mean?
An adapter that has Ethernet, USB, HDMI, VGA, the whole lot.
That is awesome.
You just do this,
oh.
And a little USB-C comes up.
It's awesome.
And then you just go like this, and it hides itself back in.
That's so cute. Yeah.
And you can play some ice hockey with this as well.
Yeah.
it smells way too good. I'm very jealous.
However good it smells, it tastes heaps better than that. It is bloody awesome.
So you're eating it fairly slow though, Craig. I'm not worried about your health and overall well-being, really.
Oh, I'm like surrounded by power cables now. It's good. It's a good system. Alright, cool. Managed.
Field's a B field.
I feel it. Cool. So I've got this. Now let's do something simple with it. Well, let's do a fairly conservative threshold of 60 arc seconds.
I'm very dumb. I am very, very dumb.
No, you're not.
I just tried to run a Python script without calling it a script.
Oh, I guess you are.
Yeah. I just gave it the inputs, but no script.
And this is why I like Altair, because I can do this. Isn't that beautiful? Okay, cool. And that tells us something very important. I don't know what it is yet, but I'm sure it's something.
Do we have, is Policy back online yet, or still?
Apparently there's problems with group.
I had just problems logging in.
Thank you very much. That burrito was better than anything I've experienced in my life that day.
You'll see a couple of there's a plot. What you can see is actually we'll just change up the size of these.
I'm not sure if Larry still wants the TT1 images.
I don't know where the scale is gone, but look at that just by itself. Okay, it still doesn't have a scale. It's very strange. Anyway, this is the separation between take a rack source and you go wet the NBSS source. This is the separation between take an NBSS source and go wet the rack source. That's the width of the rack thing.
No, indeed. So it's a mosaic image. Maybe it's more round.
That's the width of the MVSS thing.
I guess there it's so harder to separate the effect of the beam with the image you get.
Also, you can see very clearly that it's like one-to-one from the MVSS and one
from the part, and then there's a bunch of other stuff. It's interpreted very much. Well, kind of. Ripple, of course, doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
Why don't you die?
Easy. Also have to be careful if you've got what kind of primary beam you have. Like if you've got whatever voltage beam or power beam, whatever it's called. You don't need.
At the moment it's Gaussian because it's gonna have, I think, the same effect. Unless ultimately we use a proper.
But your thing is you want to have the baseline beam, right? The product of two antenna beams.
Yes, they're both circular Gaussians at the moment. So
talking about the right effective width for the image plane. Then.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you're right. Yeah. It's just that we don't have that at the moment. Mm. Well, David has, I think, good estimates of what the beam should be, but that's not implemented as part of the.
This is
that would be an interesting one to see if that improves things.
What's that?
Using proper beams.
Oh, right.
With X and Y.
Yeah, they do have some beams, some holography beams, I think. That
yeah, that's what I meant by Dave. And they're frequency dependent as well. I mean, it's. He's actually fit them independently, so it's not just a Gaussian international landmark, just in case that there are sort of glitches here and there as a result of whatever the path does to the beamforming does.
Yeah, I'm sure there must be one or more glitches. Anyway, whenever I see a KVIS window on your computer, it is not a horrible shade of green.
Yes.
How did you make that occur?
Two things that will make your life a hell of a lot easier.
Yes.
One is getting rid of that horrible green.
Yes.
The other one is not making it assume that when you zoom, it only does it by integer intervals.
Oh. It is a, how do you make it?
Yeah. I dropped down the menu.
Teach us.
I go, like, zoom policy, untick, untick. Like,
yeah, it's a real pain.
So it'll take me a sec, because I have to remind myself. It's basically an X-Windows configuration file that you need.
Oh, right.
Once you have that, everything is good. The world is good again.
My life is going to change for better now.
Yeah, I guess it's one of those things that you fix once and then never have to worry about it.
Yes.
Until you log into a new computer and go, God damn it.
Wrong Slack group. I almost posted in the CSRO wide. Oh, that would have been awkward.
Okay, 91% of these sources have a counterpart in VSS. So what the heck are these ones that don't?
Strong. Oh yeah, Galaxy has really barfed it, hasn't it?
Although I seem to be back in again now, but...
Maybe my SSH connection dropped. One of the things that's different with this computer compared to the Mac is that when, you know, an SSH connection would go stale, you'd hit sort of enter and control C a couple times and it would, you know, within like maybe 10 seconds, it would just say, right, SSH connection's gone. But this computer, it just will hang out for days and say, oh, yeah.
Same with this computer.
Yeah, is that right?
Yep.
Oh, fine.
I have to kill SSH from a dedicated SSH killing tab. If you aren't doing port forwarding or, and you aren't doing visual forwarding, you could always use something like Mosh.
Oh, right. No, I'm doing visual forwarding, XPX, tunneling, whatever.
RIP. Because Mosh is really good if you aren't doing that. If you're just doing a text connection, it buffers its own input, so you don't get input lag.
Yeah, somebody was just telling me about this.
And it, yeah, it's really good at restoring connections, and it will just maintain them.
Uh-huh. Oh, but so, it doesn't tunnel X connections.
So. But it won't tunnel X.
Yeah, okay.
This time, I don't think it will.
Somebody was just who is it? Was it you, Alex, that was telling me about it just recently?
Mosh. No, what?
No. No? Somebody was just...
Speaking of praises.
Post it in Slack.
Yes.
Sweet.
Random.
You will have to restart X11.
Looks like they plan for Mosh to work.
Dot X resources file.
I have to find that one to do that.
Wow.
This changes everything.
Your whole world view.
Vim twiddle.x. Oops.
No!
Restart X, eh?
I think.
Well.
I think it only picks up that file when you start up X Windows.
Oh, the true power of Altair is about to happen because I'm so keen.
I think you're correct, I'm.
Let's try a different approach.
Maybe I shouldn't have done my something like that.
Nice.
Yeah.
X11 common.
Oh, that's beautiful.
What?
What does that mean? Let's see about this carry on. Oh, not really. Not really willing to restart the computer. How do I restart X?
Have you tried running KVis and that, didn't
you? No.
Pick it up.
Some genius is going to fork KVis and like make it actually function properly, and they're going to be like...
I think there is a way to make it reload the...
It'd be me if I get like 3 months to myself.
I can't remember what it was.
I'll sort of, you don't waste any time on this, I'll figure it out. Thanks.
That is the one thing that's actually easier on the Mac, because you can just kill the squads.
Nice menu. Look at this fancy ass menu at this place. Like, it's really nice looking, right? It looks like a
recipe. XRDB.
But also, nothing's in order. 2, 7, 10, 12, 13.
Oh,
1.
Oh, no.
However, every single thing on the menu has a blur. And it's like, wood.
Viz output viz. Probably should have done a merge on that.
We need to, it's like adding a progress bar won't be that hard, right?
No! I like the green color there.
Oh, the blinding white though? Oh no.
Blinding white is not good. I think Emil's procedure is probably extendable.
Blinding,
generalizable.
Green text.
Purple. Wow.
Yes. Horrendous hue.
Yes. I want one that looks like sick.
That's the default.
Why am I not getting a progress bar? I should be getting a progress bar.
Is it progress?
Are you trying to fix the progress bar?
Well, there should, as in, it doesn't explicitly say it's broken, but I don't know if it's just not working or not.
This is not legit code. Like, there's no way this works. Because there is nothing called datum.
Come on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, what name was... Hang on, go back. What was... In LTA input, there's no datum.
Oh, there it is!
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You're right.
Antenna.
Well, I can just go alt dot datum, surely.
Oh,
that's magical, if that
works. Not AK plus that.
That's magical. That's ridiculous. I don't understand what's happening. Which is always good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't understand in the sense that it's too good to be true. Which is the good one. There we go, look at that. But I don't want that. What I actually want is... Can I just put... Can I just put in a...
There is a machine learning collurium tomorrow at 12 o'clock in the lecture theater.
A what?
Collurium is a funny word for talk.
Oh, what's the talk on? I'm curious.
Now. Machine learning.
I mean... What kind of machine learning?
I'm telling you what's written here. Oh no, it's somewhat more specific than that. It says machine learning 101.
Okay, cool. Machine learning, I understand.
I can use that.
Well, I won't think about going here.
You probably asked 101.
Is this about Terminators? Aww.
Alright, I've decided this is a bad idea. Oh no.
Who's giving this so-called...
Oh yeah.
Shellcat.
Oh, no. I wonder who gives even talk, I guess I know them.
Social license to operate.
What?
Ah.
The last one on the list.
I know about that one.
It's heavy.
What's that mean?
I don't know. No idea.
My girlfriend did her honours paper on social license to operate.
Does that basically mean that we have the go ahead from society?
Yep. Whether society accepts you do the thing you're doing.
Oh, well, I say we make our operations clandestine.
I think Cyrus is pretty good at doing that already, actually, inadvertently.
Not through any aptitude. I hate these suits. I'm gonna move and it's like,
better than the ones in the other place because I can actually get them under the table.
Ah, but you can just like.
No, they only go down so far. The ones in the other room didn't go down at all. Like, these ones go under the table, it's fine. The other ones don't. It's weirdly dark in here.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of feel like light.
Yeah, I can turn on the lights if you like.
Thank you. Much appreciated.
I'm going to do an end sign after an end meeting.
Okay.
It'll be fine.
That's what they all say.
Now let's start working on the good thing I was going to start.
That's fine.
Working
that's a little bit better, therefore it's better.
Okay. Oh no.
Thank you. Alt dot datum.
Just turning into a monster.
WDSS equals 0. That's amazing. That's
brilliant. It's all been run there.
I want to find multiple filters. Oh wow.
Closing in. This is a split text business. What's os.path.split text do? A split text.
Just a split with a slashy bit. No. It's a splitter.
Right.
I think.
Oh, shit. I didn't test it directly, I suppose.
Uh-oh. I think I've killed my laptop. Oh, no. Yeah, I think I need to kill this.
You know about the circular polarization discussion tomorrow that we're having as part of this busy week?
Yeah.
It is at, I'll tell you the o'clock in a second, 14 o'clock tomorrow. Are you able to make it at 14 o'clock? Okay. Just FYI. So Tara's going to be over tomorrow and other people. I think we're back in we're back in Faraday tomorrow. And then this room again on Friday.
Thank the good Lord.
Thank the good Lord. Sure.
Right. The real question is, what the hell am I doing?
Amazing. I can't see it as long as it's hidden. Amazing. What if I like pause and do things? There we go. Neat.
What are we looking at?
These are the fluxes of flux densities. Peak flux densities of things that don't have an NVSS match versus things that do. And I'm gonna color these. In the bar, color equals red. Again. Okay. New beauty. Wow. Beauty. Absolute mint. Fancy shit though. It's an import library.
I don't know. Like, makes sense.
Where specific? I think it's just like the input, IMP for input.
Oh, right. Oh, IMP?
It's IMP.
IMP?
Yep.
Oh, IMP.
Import imp.
Yeah. Import imp? Yeah, that's the importing library. Yeah. In Python 3, it's been renamed importlib.
Right.
What's the context for that?
What are we imping here?
It's a
imp.loadSource.
Right.
It's loading the model for the...
Yes.
Yeah. And that's if you can't just import it normally. I have to do that for my marking scripts.
Oh, dear. One day, PyMultiNest will become a user-friendly tool, but until that day... No, to be honest, it's just the way that this particular version has been shut up.
Yeah.
Right. So... So that model definition file you sent me is the thing that is imped, isn't it?
Yes.
Let's just download that little
So is that, have you successfully run that linear regression?
Yeah.
I've been,
it's a great sledgehammer nail problem.
Well, I didn't even try that, hey. I'm just going straight to my more complicated problem, which will undoubtedly not work. Question is, when do I actually want to run?
Alright, pipe these data onto Stromlo, onto, and then use Malice, because no one else is.
Hey! I'm using it. Don't say no one is.
No one's killing it.
That's true. Well!
Yeah. Huh,
not yet. No, I'm actually killing Zeus instead. Oh, no, it broke. Why did it broke?
Oh.
That's interesting.
What was the thing to look at the thing? Was it magic?
Did the beam just vanish on me? Is there just a cube that doesn't have an associated U? That's weird.
Okay, the thing's right, all wrong.
There is a cube that doesn't have a U. That's weird. This is not you. Of course, got copy.
There's no you will be doing it.
Yeah, I think that's the case that some of the some of them failed.
Cool. Just that one. Every other game seems fine.
I think in some of the other cubes they'll be missing channels.
Okay.
I think. But that wasn't very clear like how widespread that problem was.
Sure.
Partially because I have not looked at a single of those cubes visually yet.
Fair enough.
I'm just putting a little script to output a PNG of the sum of a cube. Should hopefully be slightly faster than trying to open it in Cadence. That's a big one. Don't know.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
It's for the exact same purposes.
Why don't you do an ASCII art version instead? That would be even faster.
Oh.
Have you seen the ASCII art version of Star Wars that you can get to via
yes!
Telnet?
Oh, Telnet tal.blinkerlights.nl. So
it.
Good. That one's always good to throw at people when they haven't like been around long enough.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, look at that.
It's blank.
I love it. It's not blank. It's minus one. I mean, zero. That's
oh,
nice.
No.
I like how zero is just a green. It's a nice green, though.
Yeah. because there must...
Is that which beam have?
Because it's Q, and therefore, when you sum it, it goes to zero, because there's positive and negative values.
What's the U?
Hmm?
What is this?
This is Q.
But the rotation measures can't be that high. And also... What?
What? It's blank. Did you forget to remove the answer?
No, I didn't answer something.
Is there something in this image?
Let's have a look.
Because it doesn't look like it.
Let's do it the old-fashioned way. Wait, is there cavers on Galaxy?
No. I installed DS9 because cavers didn't install for me.
There's cavers.
There's cavers in Galaxy, but not on Zeus, okay. Getting these together does not work. It does not like doing this.
Oh, good. Broken pipe. Here we are.
It's really unhappy about putting these together. That's amazing.
Is Galaxy back in action, guys?
Yes.
One second.
Yeah, so it is.
I mean, I'm pretty sure there's stuff in this.
That's interesting.
Excellent.
Three rocks, blah, blah.
Can you define the parameters for the model? It's got like value and then for the dictionary, value and then some value. Value is the key and then a value. Is that like
nominal? That's starting value, yeah. And then you have the range on your prior.
Yep. Yep. All good.
Should we look at the errors as well? Probably not.
Do it.
For
Flux. Flux.
No, most certainly not. So everything that doesn't have a match in MSS is fairly low flux, like very, very low flux. Cool. Well, that explains something.
Alright, now I can hurt Malice instead of hurting myself.
A00 does not exist. Does it not? What? Where the hell is it trying? Rising.
Beauty. That looks great. Yep. That clearly says it.
Alright, I'm going to fix this progress bar. Oh, because I want one.
It's like no business in this building.
Like a burrito in here. Cell cells not improving my images. That's because the directory in which it was trying to create the game table didn't exist, and therefore not creating a game table, and therefore just imaging the same data over and over and over again.
Oh, that's what it is.
What a moron.
We should just have a super cut of all the claims of idiocracy today.
Yeah.
Not today, but I remember once when I was doing self-cal with Westport data, and I had this ridiculous bug that I couldn't figure out why self-cal wasn't improving the image. And then it eventually turned out after far too long that I was not actually applying the gains to the visibilities ever.
It's like, it's just not doing anything.
It's like, it has to be doing something.
I mean, am I
well, you always come across with measurement sets as well, using the wrong table.
No. Mm-hmm. Or the wrong column, so
yeah.
Nothing in this field.
So wait a minute, shouldn't this be corrected data? Oh.
No, I think my song technique was right. I think there's just nothing in this field. Taylor.
Oh.
I just don't think there's anything in here.
Put.
Manual and set the minimum and maximum. You go to the.
Where is it for that again? To set, is it? Yeah.
So what's the integer zoom business?
You know when you expand your window,
mm-hmm.
it'll only do it in
one
or
two. Yeah, it's super annoying.
Whereas now it'll just do it smoothly.
Glory be.
When you draw a box, it doesn't need a black border around it as well, probably. Right?
So that used to annoy the crap out of me. It's like, why?
Yeah, I know. That's what I think every day when I use it.
This person would decide that this was the best option to choose both.
It's like, it's the pinnacle. Except,
I mean, maybe it was an efficiency thing back then or something.
Yes, you wouldn't have to interpolate or whatever. Yeah. It probably does some resampling to get it onto the non-integer grid, right?
Whereas now it's like...
It's just how fast is your X connection. That's what the limiting factor is, right?
I mean, what's
so the stuff there? It's just quick.
Yeah.
All right. So they are the in params. Good. Schott.
I guess it's you convince yourself there's a wall there, but stared really hard.
It is an exhaustive. What's the, if you put the intensity scale on that as well?
Oh dear.
Those equals true.
There's a little thing. Oh, hello. There we go. I'm trying to think, what is the best way to squish a cube in order to see if I just look at an image to see if there's anything there?
Oh, so you can, you mean just continual average?
Yeah.
So you can create a moment.
Yeah.
With the myriad.
Yeah, but...
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, as in, I have a little Python script, but I'm currently just summing, but I'm worried that any sources with structure would just sum to zero if there's any carry over rotation.
It should still leave some residual, it shouldn't completely.
Maybe, I guess maybe it's an issue of just setting the reasonable range. We could even, what if a little bit of, you set the image to have a little normalization rather than just. And then it has minimum, has negative values.
Well, it's a thing that Andre does, because I think he takes the square and then sums it.
In polarization?
Yeah.
Yes, Q² + Q².
To see if there's something there.
Yeah, it's the sum of the polarized and heavy, that makes more sense.
See what now?
Yeah, as in. I just have like a little script to produce an image, just as in like one, just to see what's there, just out of curiosity. You probably need to produce, or you could just even square the cube so it's all positive and then look at it.
Yeah. Well, you can square the cube to the sum.
Yeah.
It'll bring up your noise, because
it'll
all be positive and it'll.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter anyway, right?
Yeah, just, if you're just general. Looking for signal.
Yeah.
Or if you have U as well, you could basically generate P and then...
You can mean it, if you like.
I was trying to do it in a way that is like as quick as possible, just to like look at one. Cube and zoof.
Because I think I typically used to just do that.
Just look at P. Square Q and sum it.
Yeah, well, I take the mean.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you've got really big numbers and hard to interpret. But
I mean,
it's the same thing you did at the end of the day.
What about these units? Or am I just off by a factor of 10?
Dekajanskis per beam.
The gene outputs Janskis, right?
Oh, wild.
Yeah, it does. Of course.
How is this possible? Love Norm. Well, that's the weirdest thing. I was logged into a computer in Perth when I tried the Kvis is white thing. I've just opened Kvis on Galaxy and it's white.
Big flux against big flux.
Same.
Integrated flux.
NVSS only has
what
I can do. It's integrants. There we go.
And I would say maybe it's a local server, but
I
mean, this is bad, but also, also they're in different units, but like,
That's some creepy voodoo, Emil.
Emil be in your systems.
Did it also just send you a copy of my data?
Emil just scooped me on three different projects.
Yeah, it's highly weird, I'd say.
It's awesome.
Just
I think it's going to be off by like
26,
but that just cooks out.
What's that saying?
Check if there's an X resources file in your home directory.
In my local home directory?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, but it's not doing the Zoom thing, as promised, so now I'm pretty fed up with you.
I was trying to eat sandwich.
Zoom pause.
Damn it. That's the
yeah, one. Integer X and Y Zoom are checked.
The question here is, do I not trust a G in or do I not trust?
Unbelievable.
Which sickos are at us.
No, no X resources file in my home directory on Galaxy where I just loaded the Kvis. And it's white.
Alrighty.
That is some creepy voodoo. Not, and neither is there one on my local computer.
One thing I can do is color these by how far apart they are.
So cool, man.
I wonder if it somehow updates the locations, the
it might actually
resources locally in your X environment.
Yeah, maybe it does something with your local X client or something.
That's the only thing I can think of.
When you do XRDB, maybe it actually affects your
local.
Yeah. Oh, my God, that's not even funny. Because the window manager is on the computer, right?
Yeah.
I mean, on your local computer, right?
Terminal.
Yeah. Which is why Kvis pops up immediately, and all it's waiting for is information to come over the network about.
It's actually in the window.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But the local stuff is all done by the local window manager, actually,
yes.
Isn't it? Yeah. So it must send the signal saying, and make it white. Open it and make it white.
That's weird, what is it?
So I'm going to see if I can list everything locally.
This one's further away.
Let's just hit this sucker.
It's been decades since I last had to write software to work with Excel. I know there's lots of weird things that you have to keep track of. I mean, it's very powerful, but also contorted in a way.
Oh yeah, so it's got, locally it has those settings on my computer.
So why doesn't the zoom work?
Don't know, because it says integer x zoom false, and integer y zoom false, but then when I open Kvis, it had them ticked yes. But actually it was more about the colors.
When you get used to the zoom, so...
the zoomies.
It's actually my favorite one. Just used to expand your window and the thing's the same size. Like, come on, I don't have a monitor that's big enough to zoom.
Why did I expand this thing? But it must make it slower if it's trying to redraw as you bring out the window.
Right? Oh, it's reasonably quick. I mean, it must be smart enough to realize that there's no point in continuing to redraw if you haven't. If you continue to move.
If there's a slow connection, you'll see that like the corner icon gets kind of repeated across the
separation
before it's redrawn the canvas. Oh, but maybe
two color ones. There's two color ones that don't go through
maybe
twice.
Maybe waiting or something.
Yeah, blue purple, you reckon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, they're called blue purple, not
also
BLPU2 or something.
Likes this. How do I add a like reaction?
I mean, we need more. We need a strong word. more fun reaction emojis.
One slack. RM.
I have a 5. All right, that's all we got here. Eight. Well, you can do middle finger.
Yes.
Please do.
Did Spock hand instead.
Ah, I fixed the progress bar. Ta-da!
Handy reactions.
Oh, well done.
Flags.
Well, I fixed the progress bar for synth.
There's really some strange stuff here.
Live long and prosper.
All right.
My model is defined.
Very nice.
Pull it up from here. Oda.
Today, in about 24 minutes, we have a discussion with Josh Marvel about EMU coordination. Could be right up your alley, right?
Do you know how to coordinate EMUs?
Yeah. Just throw a leash on them and...
And then, after half an hour, we'll sort of smoothly transition to discussing pilot survey planning. So, and Mal will be joining as well. So basically, you have 24 minutes to get anything done, and the rest of the day will be
right off
meetings.
Ditto.
Right. I guess we should probably leave straight at 5, really, to get down to cure relation.
Probably. I'm not sure when Shari's getting there.
Well, our reservation's for 6:30, so. Alec, we can just, you've got an Opel card, presumably, do you?
What's that? Sorry?
Do you have an Opel card?
I do. I also have a car, because...
Yeah, I have a car too, but...
Sorry, what's happening tonight?
George also has a
first. Were you going to come to the pub quiz?
Oh, it's pub quiz tonight. I don't think I will tonight.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
oh,
thank you. Catching up with my cousin tonight. Too many people in Sydney.
Plus, it's still really far away. I'm catching up with my sister now. So blue purple is too light coloured, so I need a light background.
If I run all this nonsense, this nonsense should run.
Replace that. Purple is N5.
It's Beretta's time.
Yay.
Everyone's favorite time.
Meshed. Meshed.
Did they get the nest?
Just gonna chuck this little hooner in there.
Right. Yeah, I don't.
Update. Alright, just create this sucker. Set up your destination directory.
Close.
Finished. Whiskey.
Yes, good.
There we go, beauty. Alright, it's not as bad as I thought it was, but it's still pretty bad. The ones that have less common flux are further away from each other, and so they probably aren't real source compared.
Judas.
And biblical. The ones that are close are very odd looking. In fact, they're up by a factor of 10.
So what's this coordination discussion, Bizzo? Let me look at this thing.
I don't know.
Before I go dump anything into the possum slack, does someone want to send me check this plot for me?
Sure.
I match all the NVSS sources in a beam to, well, rack sources in a beam to NVSS sources in a beam and plotted their peak fluxes against each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they're covered by how far apart they are on the sky.
Uh-huh. What's the scale?
Log millidranskys.
No, I mean the color scale.
Oh, the color scale? Separation in arc seconds.
Oh, and it goes up to 60.
It goes up to 60. That's my cutoff.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's roughly linear, but it's off by a factor of 10.
Oh, that makes sense.
Why is that?
Because the frequencies, maybe not a factor of 10, but some difference makes sense because the frequency's off by a factor of, almost 2, right?
Okay, so it could be that.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
We'll have that. Well, maybe. You could do is put if you draw a 1-to-1 line.
Mm.
But not 1-to-1. If you...
The spectral index at
0.7
or something.
Yeah, exactly. So what is that? 1400 over...
850, is it?
What are the mins and maxes for the sphere, for racks?
It's basically 750 to 1030 or so.
Right? Sorry, what's
that? The min-max of the rack's frequency range.
Oh.
Megahertz?
Sure.
Mega schnitzels.
744.
1032. 1032. Thank you.
Right. Do you need an exact?
No.
Okay.
The strong line.
884 is the central frequency.
888.
888.
Okay.
888. 888
over 14.
And then assuming a spectral index.
Yeah. Yeah, no, a factor of 10 is definitely not good.
Yes, good.
But it should be 37% difference if I did this right.
Okay, so if I assume that the...
About 1.38. 1 to 1.38 line.
1.38, okay.
Yeah.
Log space... I'll go minus 1 to...
Yes, where's your factor of 10 coming from then?
Don't know. It could be a gene. I don't really trust its numbers too much. I'll draw that line in there.
Hey Matthew.
Hi.
Do you have an idea to update the progress, TQDM progress bar within a map, a pulled up map?
Unless it knows about you. Okay, TQDM is a thread type.
I don't. Alright.
What you can do is have TQDM pull something that you're updating.
Localization issue because
that is thread type. In your main thread,
give or take,
and then update itself. But I mean, there's probably a thread type TQDM out there somewhere.
Should be just
sus. I'll leave that
for now.
And these are peak fluxes that you're plotting, right?
Yeah, these are peak.
So it doesn't matter what the beam size is, if it's compact, right?
Also, everything in the NVSS is compact here. The Rex ones aren't,
mm-hmm.
So I expect some difference, but...
But it wouldn't be systematically a factor of 10 difference.
No. I mean, it's not systematic anyway, there's quite a lot of scatter,
yeah.
But also, this is a very dodgy.
Was there a primary beam correction done?
Probably not. Didn't someone ask about that in Slack recently?
I sure did.
And
it depends on what image you're using, I think.
Yes. To do this, little this is straight from the beam.
Cube?
Oh, beam okay. Cube. I went very naively.
Okay. Yeah, you'll need to apply the primary beam.
Is there
a okay. Toilet on this? Yeah, down there and then follow the same pattern as downstairs.
Thank you.
So it's on the right as you go past the little helicopter. Cool.
You need to go for a whiz.
Yeah. All right.
Oh,
that's good. That's a good gag.
All right, Emil. I missed you. can I just call you from time to time on the phone and say, just sort of say things and wait for a good pun? Yeah. Thanks.
Dial for a prayer or
dial a pun.
You said 1.35%, did you?
Hey.
What was the number you gave?
1.38, let's see.
1.38.
Close enough.
And that's the flux offset. So 1 to 1.38 line? Yeah.
You'll multiply the NVSS flux by that number to get a, you know, representative.
The NVSS value. Flux or the RAX flux?
Hey.
The NVSS flux or the RAX flux?
The RAX flux should be 1.38 times the NVSS flux on average.
So divide. Cool.
Okay.
Well, that's the opposite direction of the
yeah.
to the thing. So that makes it worse, I would say.
Oh, is it the wrong way around? Which one was brighter than which on yours?
NVSS was brighter.
Oh, yeah, it's the wrong way around.
That's good. I'm still going to draw the line so we can see it.
Yeah, like, that's first.
And then I'll go through and fix things. Actually, wait, no, this is with my...
You said it was peak flux
on Yeah, peak.
Because if you
I can do integrated instead, which should be a better option, but...
Oh, well, you can do it.
I mean, it doesn't change it.
Actually, no, it shouldn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I'm not sure how it
works. Mark, point...
If you're using the right beam, which is an if... I don't trust the beams in the ASCAP images, really.
It shouldn't affect...
But wait a minute, you're looking at a cube?
Hmm? This is the beam. Intensity.
So this is a single tube planar. Thing that you got from somewhere.
What, sir?
It's two-dimensional. Sorry.
Yeah, it's two-dimensional. I can look at the cube directly.
No. I'm curious where you got the two-dimensional image from.
Oh, I squished them.
I
probably squished them wrong. Okay.
So how did you squish?
I took the mean.
That should be okay.
If there are blank channels in there, it could
be there right. aren't in this beam.
Okay.
Because
I think some of them are acute channels for
yeah.
I did make the naive assumption, I think on this beam, I didn't on all the beams on this beam, that they all had the same beam size.
That's,
which
I
is,
mean, it's not right, but it's probably
It's not right, right, but it's not hugely wrong.
I would think not, yeah.
It's also very slow to fix that on the stromal surface, which is why I did that.
But it makes the integrated flux probably a bit fishy, if you were to use it.
But the peak should be okay.
The peak
right.
I would have thought would be okay.
Yeah.
Well, it should be factor 10. It's...
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the beam is not super different between the min and max. It's a little bit... Oh, hang on. This is the full image. No, I totally did squish with the smoothing. So that's not an issue on these images.
Are you squished with the smoothing?
I did do the thing that I just said I didn't do.
Okay.
There's a lot of data going around. Anyway,
group.
I'm used to getting my cataloging going.
So if it hasn't been primary band corrected, all of the out of field sources will be significantly weaker than NVSS.
Yes.
So maybe I should plot the separate distance from the center of the beam or something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Then you should see a nice little.
Yeah. Or I can probably go by that.
Yeah, you could color code by that. Or you could put in a nominal Gaussian correction, which is if you know how far it is from the beam center, just multiply by a Gaussian with a width of...
Mm. I don't know what the beam center is for this beam. I don't need to find that.
Center of the image.
Yeah, exactly.
That means I've got to load the image again.
CRL2.
Yeah.
Close enough.
If that's close enough, yeah, I'll just load that in then.
Yeah.
It's
what it is. It's within a pixel or two of the...
Yeah.
With open...
if the images are, the ones that are being made, are they significantly bigger than the primary beam?
No, that's hard to say.
Okay, so you would see significant effects.
You definitely will, yeah.
Nothing in there.
And I would say, Matthew, if the primary beam correction value would be less than 10%, just exclude that point from consideration.
Sure.
Yeah.
CR-VAL?
CR-VAL 1 and CR-VAL 2.
Sure.
So RA and DEC respectively.
All right.
Thank you.
Key error. All right.
Of course. Oh.
Yes. Alright, sweet. That looks fine.
Yes. Let's not do that anymore.
Is this field big enough to... no, it probably isn't.
What value do the blank channels have? Do we know? During that?
Mm.
In the cube, do you know if there's a blank channel? Are they blanked with like a certain value? Are they just zeros?
Zero.
In a cube?
Mm.
Shouldn't be, hopefully. Should be nans.
Oh, no, not the one, the racks. Racks cubes.
In the racks cubes, yeah.
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 Oh,
they're zero, it's bad. If you're running through RM synthesis and you've got channels that zero that aren't zero, blah. Sorry,
yeah. Yeah, yeah.
This way, your RM spectrum would be none.
Yes.
Final goal.
Peshwari.
Oh, no, there they are. There are sources. Wait, I can see the sources. They're just little.
Evolve it with something.
Evolve that sucker.
Just get a different. Well, I need to clean my screen.
It's terrible when you're looking for transients. Oh,
there was a transient, but it was because I sneezed.
I need a different color map.
Oh dear.
That was a mad laugh.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Oh, it's Q squared.
Oh, whoops.
Anyway, that's the 1-to-1 line or 1-to-3 line, 1.3 line.
Uh-huh.
And then this is colored by distance from center.
Uh-huh.
So there's your lacking by primary beam correction.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw that.
So I could imagine that.
Yeah,
it's not going to be out by.
Somehow,
distance from
center.
Oh, yeah,
my backpack.
Yeah, integrated.
Stuff collecting on my screen.
Yeah.
1-to-1. Or 1-to-whatever.
1-to-whatever, yeah. It's like down there, which is interesting. So NVSS should be brighter than RAX, yeah?
NVSS should be...
Choices.
No, RAX should be brighter than NVSS.
RAX should be bright. That's what I meant to say.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Cool.
But it's only 40% or whatever, so it's not going to
be... Sure, so it's not going to be like that.
Mm-hmm. It should be RA and DEC 2.
But like, I'm leaning towards me having done something horribly wrong.
Well, that's unresolved, I think, at this point.
I mean, like, still.
No, I mean, it's not. Well, I mean, you're just taking the catalog value.
Right? Yep. Really set the
from NVSS.
Yep.
But I thought it was actually so it's tabulated as Milodesky, right?
It's
max,
in Milodesky, yes.
In the catalog,
yeah.
I mean, right? Milodesky.
Yep.
And you've got from a G and something in Jansky.
Which I multiplied by 1E3.
1E3. Okay.
All right, let's some dark dots. I feel like dark dots are easy to try and spot. And it should be.
I mean, that would be a factor of 10 is the thing. Any unit conversion would be 3.
Well,
3 tens.
Say again, sorry?
Any unit conversion issues, unless they're not Janskis, will be a factor of 10
to
3.
The whole,
yeah, that's right.
So,
yeah, the whole,
and you didn't accidentally put 10 to 2 or something, did you?
It's, no, it's 3.
Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah.
I mean, Adrian has given me wrong pluxes before.
We'll take
medium.
Dot encode.
Oh, this is Altair.
Yeah,
it's an Altair wallet,
though, right?
So it's a declarative plotting library. It's not map plotting. Yep, don't worry about it.
Just the final
weird. Yeah, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
So, yeah, so the distribution of fluxes looks like that.
Yeah. You sort of put the threshold a bit lower so that it's...
Yeah.
So it goes down to... And that's in Jansky, which is an annoying thing. But they go down to 1 e to the minus 4, which feels like...
Image.
1...
So
too low.
That's your main...
Yeah. Yeah. And then...
Yeah.
Or like 100 too high.
No, it seems like 10 too low.
Yeah.
This is from which...
Median.
Hmm?
Well, either it's
just
low,
the median value of
image.
This is from which what?
That's from Rax.
This is Rax, sorry. This is Rax and...
It's just multiplied by
the gene.
Rax and gene.
Yeah.
10...
I should look at the peak values to see if they look like they're completely wrong.
Did you let the genes subtract out of the background?
I did.
I wonder if you should not do that.
It's, I guess, signal.
Good question.
10 should pop up.
That's V max equals like.
Well, what we can do is we can look at the background.
Yeah,
we can see what the background is. Well, hey, that should be in the.
Yeah,
we just won't get an overall scale, right? That would give you a weird, funny plot.
What's that, sir?
It would give you a funny plot than what you've got, actually. It wouldn't be an overall offset by
the
background. Oh, I've got the background anyway, so I can like look at it. We can color it by the background. Ooh, that's odd. Okay, well, we're off to a good start with that one.
Colors are better, right?
By the way, the nice thing about Altair is I just swap out the word distance with the word background, and then it just...
Sorts it out.
Yep. There you go. That's the background. So there doesn't seem to be any obvious correlation there. But also the background is pretty much anywhere from... it's too small to matter.
Very small.
Very, very tiny.
I wouldn't have given that
noise. Local RMS. No correlations of any note. The residual mean? Oh, what about the error influx?
Well, it's going to give you a...
Nothing of interest. Also, the higher up there you go, the further away from the MPSS source you are. So,
Josh.
Hey, Josh. That's MPSS
separation.
RS
separation.
Yeah. Which could well be just because it's further out in the beam.
What does it mean? What do you mean NVSS separation?
Separation from the nearest NVSS source.
Ah, okay.
Cut.
In degrees.
60. It's the same. Everything else is the same. The color scale. Color scale.
Right. And the color scale is in degrees.
The color scale is in degrees. Wait, is it?
I think so.
Yes. Wait.
That's an 18.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay, so there's a primary beam thing going on there.
Yeah, there's definitely a primary beam thing, so I can definitely correct that in some way, or at least just note that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
But even, like, bang in the middle, it should be fine, right?
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah,
the purple one should be right on the line, I would have thought.
Yeah, so, well, I mean, they're not those purple ones. You want the,
Oh, sorry, the primary beam.
Primary beam, yeah, so distance.
Weird.
Yeah. So, yeah, super funky. I'm going to open up the image in DS9 KVIS or something and just see what the peak values are.
A good idea.
The peak values of a compact source should be the peak, like the set value in the center should be the value in, yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's check.
It should be the case for extended sources too.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm going to just go to a compact one because it makes it easier.
Okay. That's odd. Hey, Josh. Hi. Have you noticed a factor of 10 flux scale error in all of your EVU images?
No. I would definitely show up in these validation logs. So you could maybe ask Andrew if he's looked at any lately. I actually haven't super recently.
I'm just being facetious for this. We currently have a factor of 10 thing going on, but it must be an isolated error.
It's got to be somewhere between Aegean and me.
I suppose you're taking a single plane out of the cube just to see how that comes in.
Malice, a bunch. It's not terrible. 5 dockets.
You're not dividing by the square root of the number of channels or something, right?
No. Also meant to.
You're not.
You could ask me anything like that, and I would have no idea.
Depends on what you're doing, I suppose.
You could do some real good gags, I think.
It's almost certain that you shouldn't be dividing by the square root of them. This is just I, right?
Yeah, it's just I. I never remember what my cave is. But it doesn't make any sense to me at all. Fortunately, when I click X, it just crashes. That's good. Easy to get out.
So, Josh, I think we'll wait until Anne joins, and then we can get started. Is that okay?
Great. You know.
Making pictures and running around synthesis on a different machine that hopefully doesn't fill up the memory point.
Are we on the same machine now?
I'm on Motley now.
Oh.
Really?
Why are you on Motley?
Because Malice ran out of memory.
Sorry. It's probably not me, actually. I'm not doing anything memory intensive anymore. Except on Zeus, where I have just lost my connection, fortunately, as I have already finished everything.
A nice black image.
Mint.
It might need to be 100 times the RMS.
Well, that's surprising, because that would have fully showed the
RMS. Theta and Y and DY.
I'm confused.
What's going on there?
All right, let's have a gander at one of these sources. Ooh, nice little double. Isn't it cute?
Did you, by any chance, print with the RMS source?
No. I can, though. Let's have a look. Oh, let me just close that.
0.0008. What's that in real units? -4. Hey, that's not good. -50. Well, it's the -3.
So you do using a logarithmic scale for the
Yeah, the shifty looking the faintest looking sources in the image are coming out with a peak of 0.00
and do just
0 something. Yeah. Which is -4. So
high something or a low something?
Low something.
Because I think what's happening is it's probably the lowest.
So it's like 2 times 10 to the -4. I will look at just one slice and think.
It's too low. That's why I think the brightest source, the faintest source should be around a millijansky.
Yeah. I'll just grab the fifth beam in total intensity and look at one of the slices to see if I stuffed it. Because it could well be the case.
Alright.
So they were like the peaks in the Faraday spectra.
He's just very still.
So it's like pixel number versus Faraday.
Waiting to launch his attack.
Very unusual of Josh Marvin to remain still. Oh, he hears me now.
He's like, I didn't join to get insulted.
Yeah,
Screw you guys. Funny.
There you go. RMS is -7.
Yeah, there's definitely an upset happening here in the.
They did get this -20 or something.
No.
But I set the max to be the condensed RMS.
What have I done here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Huge move. Right. Bloody well blown at someone else.
No doubt.
So the slice looks okay, which makes me think that the problem is in the smoothing or something.
How long it takes to open up the image?
That's not that now.
That's because I think it's opening up 5 hours. That's nice.
That's funky.
Yeah. And there's
that?
This is the mean.
Got a leakage in New Zealand.
Cube switch.
I'm just trying to see if that's a source that I'm looking at.
I don't know how
to. Like,
Yes, okay, so this is just...
Yeah. Oh, sorry. It was grunge or, yeah. Yeah.
So it's nice.
Cool.
It shows up your noise. Because usually you like to see the noise because it gives you a feel it.
Yeah, where it's actually happening. Nice.
Warm, fuzzy feeling.
Yeah.
It's warmer in the corners, this one.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's working quite nicely. These suckers in
quadrature. Okay, the problem is in the squishing or the smoothing. I don't know which. Should I be taking the meanable channels or the sum?
Bigger shoe? Are you trying to bigger shoe?
I don't know. Maybe. And I'll fit it in the computer at Stromo. Do I want to sum them and not mean them?
No.
No, I want to mean them, right? Yeah.
You do want to mean them.
That's what I thought. And if I do a convolution with a Gaussian, everything should still be fine, right?
Well, the flux is coming out of a refractor sent off from expectation.
Yeah.
I mean, so how do you know it's the...
I looked at a single slice, and that looked fine.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I looked at the slice wrong. There's a lot of potential places this could be.
What if you do medium instead of mean?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Just for fun and games.
I can definitely try that, and I probably should have done that to start with.
Yeah, actually, that's a good way to get around... planes, which are a bit funky as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not getting anything near as faint in the single. I will do median and see how that goes.
So you need to do some bookkeeping whether the convolution is unit peak or unit area, and then whether or not you update the restoring beam in the header, right?
The beam should match in the header.
So it should be unit peak then if you're using the larger beam.
Yeah. I need to. Hey, look, I stole this code from you. what's the normalization of that Gaussian?
In what sense?
If I do a convolution of a compact object with a larger beam with this Gaussian, what happens to the peak value of it?
Peak value should go down.
Well, we don't want it to go down.
No, hang on.
No, you're right.
Yeah, the convolution kernel should have unit peak. A peak of 1, so the peak flux should be the same. But the integrated area should go up, and that's why you update the beam in the header.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think that... it should be normalized. That's why it's got the... It's normalized by the area.
It's normalized by the area, but we want to normalize by the peak. I think.
Yeah, radio violates your common conceptions about what a Gaussian should be.
Yeah. So we should be multiplying this by, 2 pi sigma. Square root of 2 pi sigma.
Right, just divide by its max.
Except that I'm just using AstroPi's Gaussian 2D kernel, so.
Perhaps Anne has joined. Is Anne there?
Yes, barely awake, but I'm here.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, everyone.
I think Josh is probably also similarly sleepy.
How do you capture specifically the...
Good.
So with warnings.catch warnings, you can then warnings.filter warnings inside it.
So we're going to get started with the discussion, guys, okay?
Yep.
All right. Josh, I'm going to sort of hand over to you. I don't know if you had particular things that you thought would be useful to discuss, but I certainly didn't write down a list of things that I wanted to discuss.
Sure. I made some slides just to sort of summarize what EMU has converged on and the things that we're still sort of mulling over.
Mm-hmm.
Could I
go
kind of quickly, maybe 10 minutes?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right.
Got it?
Can you see some kind of title slide?
Sure can.
All right. Cool. Okay, so for anyone who doesn't know me, I'm Josh Marble. I'm part of the EMI management team presently in the States at NRAO in Sapporo. Ray Norris, EMU's PI, is leading the working group on the pilot preparation. So this is really on his behalf and on behalf of the rest of the management team and the survey team. A quick overview of our project, the full survey. Ideally, we aim to be a 10 microjansky per beam at 10 arc second resolution all sky continuum survey. Telescope performance is looking like we might have to bend a little on the sensitivity, you know, maybe go up to like something like 15 microjanskys over the whole sky, which is still pretty acceptable, I think. We have a very large team, probably about 100 people internationally. We have lots of different working groups. Some of the working groups are like key science projects, of which there's, I don't know, something like 10 across galactic, extragalactic, astrophysics and cosmology. We also have a lot of working groups kind of to prepare for the survey on different technical development type aspects. So things like refining the observing strategy, that's one that I lead. Commissioning of ASCAP soft and the data reduction pipelines. Kind of move this window here so I can see my slides. Giving feedback to COSDA about how our users want to interact with the data archive, and making sure it meets our needs, especially like in terms of uploading level 7 data. We have a working group on data validation, for which we have developed a lot of scripts to sort of dig into the images coming out of the pipeline, find various potential issues. We have working groups on things like source extraction, both compact and diffuse, source classification, self-IDs, cross-IDs, source redshifts, and sort of a blanket working group on machine learning and astrophysics that's sort of become a thing of its own now. We also have collaboration projects with other large area surveys, including radio surveys and multi-wavelength surveys, some of which I listed on the slide. So that's EMU, and one of the things we're busy doing is preparing for this 100-hour pilot observation to start quite soon. So we see the primary goal of the pilot being to test our survey strategy and the pipelines that we will use for the full survey, not, you know, beyond sort of the era of commissioning and answering specific questions about data quality and how we should be using the telescope. Those tests we've requested sort of in preparation of the pilot, and we think we have kind of most of the answers that we need now, barring one or two that I'll talk about at the end. For the pilot, we would like to basically take a subset of the all-sky tiling strategy. That subset will be about 300 square degrees in a single contiguous area. What that would look like is, since we have an instantaneous field of view of like 25 to 30 square degrees, that would be about 10 hours per field for each of about 9 fields, since we have 100 hours. And to make a square pseudo-rectangular area instead of like a long strip or something, we would pick like about a 3x3 arrangement of these 9 fields. And I should say that we hope that the 10 hours per field will get us close to our desired sensitivity. There's some open questions about, you know, the true sensitivity we can achieve versus what can come out of a sort of not perfectly tuned data reduction pipeline, since you can't tune the data reduction pipeline perfectly over the entire sky, kind of blindly. So still sort of TBD on exactly what performance we'll get out of this 10 hours. You know, we're looking forward to analyzing that. One of the important things about the all sky tiling strategy is uniformity, which we want to keep to within 10%, both within a tile and between tiles. And that's driven by some of the scientific requirements of some of our key science projects, especially cosmology. For this first 100 hours of pilot, we would like to do something that's fairly typical, but also fairly easy. So things like avoiding the equator and avoiding the galaxy make sense to us. We may be interested in requesting a second pilot if the first one is successful, and the second one might be something like part of the galaxy with more extended structure, and that might actually feed into like a different sort of set of tunings for the data reduction pipeline compared to this first pilot, which would be representative of more of a standard extragalactic observation. We want to avoid solar interference, and we're still working to understand whether that means observing at nighttime or observing also during the day, but within some constraints. And we have a preference for fields studied at other wavelengths to maximize the scientific output of the pilot data, but that is not our primary goal, and that is more of a, we'll do that if we can. Picking a field that is well studied at other wavelengths, that is. So in terms of the frequency we want to observe at for the pilot, this is the same frequency tuning as we now want to adopt for the full EMU survey, which is approximately the shaded region. It avoids strong RFI above, you know, to the right side of this region. And that's kind of the RFI that we would have had taking up about half of our usable bandwidth had we gone with the original frequency tuning, which went up to like 1440 megahertz, which would have been commensal with Wallaby. So now we've moved it lower, where to a lower frequency where the source counts will go up, where the thesis of the telescope is fairly similar, and where there's more usable bandwidth. But we want to avoid the very low end where thesis does go up fairly significantly. The beam footprint that we want to use for the pilot is close pack 36, with a pitch of 0.9 degrees and no interleaving. This was arrived at with a lot of compromises. Those compromises really balance sort of our goals about uniformity for the survey. Not only uniformity and sensitivity, but also sort of the uniformity in primary beam shape, sort of the self-similarity, if you will, of the primary beams at the edge of this footprint versus in the center. Also simplicity. So we'll have half, you know, by discarding interleaving, which we think we can get away with at these low frequencies, we will basically have the number of total pointings in the full survey. The data reduction will not need to combine as many different beams. The deconvolution can happen over the full 10 hours of integration time. You know, we don't need to increase the overhead by slewing back and forth and figure out what cadence to do that at. I should mention that this observing strategy does not completely optimize the survey speed. That would come at the cost of trading off some things like uniformity and possibly simplicity. But I think this is within, you know, 5% or so of a reasonable maximum survey speed observation. The all-sky tiling scheme that we would like to use comes from Dave's recent script, and that's shown here. This is what we would call to generate all the tiles within the EMU survey. There are 1,700 of them. There's only about 5% of overlap in this tiling strategy, a lot of which you can see in this graphic is centered around the border between this sort of quasi-rectangular tiling scheme where the footprints are put adjacent to each other around the south celestial pole, and the tiling scheme that consists of constant strips of declination. So the declination, you can see my cursor here. I can't even see my cursor. No, not gonna work. Yeah, so basically you can see on the boundary between the quasi-rectangular region and the strips, there's a lot of overlap. That's where a lot of that 5% comes from. That could actually be very good for some types of quantification of survey systematics, systematic errors. You can see that the declination strips also have regions of overlap which increase as you go farther south, and that's just something that you have to kind of eat to tile the whole sky with a footprint of constant shape. Now there are much better ways we could tile the sky, changing the shape of the footprint in some sort of maybe trapezoid as a function of declination, which would be really cool, but also fairly complicated, and so we'd like to also keep things simple. So this seems acceptable. The graphic below is actually part of an Aladdin Light overlay I put together, and I have the URL shortened up there on the slide if you want to have a little play with that. And then finally, for the target area of the pilot, like I said, we want to pick 9 tiles generated by this all-sky tiling strategy. So one of our preferred regions is the Dark Energy Survey, a South Pole Telescope field, which we could cover somewhat well with these 3x3 tiles, if this happens to work out, barring these other constraints like the solar RFI. So I've given roughly the position on the sky where this would be if this field works out for us and what that might look like. Now, after putting the slide together, I realized that running Dave's tiling code, let me just back up one. You can see that on the right-hand side of this figure is where all the tiles sort of line up in constant RA. And that, I think, is 12 hours. And I think I can adjust that. And if I can't adjust that, then I would make it 0 hours. And then you wouldn't see this offset on the third row of our 3x3 grid. So I'll just have to follow up with Dave about the options for his script, if it supports that. I think it does, and I just overlooked it. But it's not a big deal. Again, we want to choose these 9 fields from the all-sky tiling strategy, and if it happens to make it so we could make the pilot look a little more rectangular, that'd be great, but it's not really essential. This, you could argue that this might be a little more representative of sort of any regular patch in the sky anyway, so that could be interesting. So that's my last slide. Let me just mention that, again, the only real things that we're waiting to hear from ACES on before going ahead with this observing strategy is an update on the solar avoidance. So there was a study done with the Beta telescope that showed that there was kind of a cone of acceptable sort of solar RFI mitigation where you could observe during the day provided the sun was not either too close to the field or so far away from the field that it was like behind the dish and illuminating the path. So if that holds true for ADE and that can be reproduced, then we'd like to schedule this during the day with those solar avoidance constraints, in which case we would be prepared to schedule this very quickly, like in June. If it turns out that we either do not understand well enough the solar interference issue, or if it's concluded that daytime observing is simply affects the performance significantly compared to nighttime observing, even obeying some constraints, then we could observe this same field at night if we waited until, I believe, September, which is not ideal. So we would like to get an answer quickly about this issue. But if not, waiting, and if we either don't have a conclusion or the conclusion is we should wait, then I think that's still on the table. If we wanted to find a field in June that was a nighttime field that was an alternative to SPT, nothing has really kind of been suggested that has a lot of multi-wavelength data. Most of the other sort of fields around this section are currently daytime. But if anyone has a suggestion, please let me know. Otherwise, that's kind of where we're at. We just need to know if daytime is acceptable, and if so, with what solar avoidance parameters and when the observations would start, and we could make a more conclusive determination about which exact 9 tiles of the all sky tiling strategy to select for the pilot. Okay, I hope that's been fairly comprehensive. I have no idea how much time I used up.
You did great, that's fine. can I ask you a question right away? I mean, obviously with the frequency shift, and I think I kind of asked you this before, but I'll ask it in a more pointed way now. with the frequency shift, you're no longer commensal with Wallaby. But to a certain extent, what EMU wants to do is are sort of science goals, and these observations that you're proposing do a good job at meeting the science goals that you have as a team. But to what extent are you actually hoping or planning even to make use of continuum data that would come from Wallaby observations? I mean, Wallaby is locked into frequency; they can't move, right?
Yeah, I think that's part of the benefit of trying to maintain these collaboration projects with surveys like Flash or Wallaby to understand the nature of the continuum data that might be available outside this this band that we'll use for EMU. I think other things have come along throughout commissioning that affect commensality. One of them is the potential use of online continuum averaging, which has proven quite useful in keeping up with the data rates. So I think the intention here is to use online continuum averaging to 1 megahertz channels so that the processing can keep up with observation and we can actually observe at a fairly rapid pace. Whereas I might be a little out of date on this, but without improving the computing infrastructure, observing at full resolution may produce sort of data backlogs that would halt observations at full resolution until the data processing could keep up. So I think the concept of commensality was always meant to be sort of reviewed, and also the different SSTs will have different ideas about how to sort of do the survey strategy and the different constraints. So it's not clear to me that was always kind of locked into working out. I think what we're proposing is pretty sensible.
What I'm asking is not really about that. I'm just asking whether in your science planning, you'll actually be, counting on the fact that there will be continuum products deriving from observations like the ones done by Wallaby. That would be good supplements potentially to the core EMU observations.
Yeah, I think maintaining awareness of those products is going to be really important. There's some key science projects that will want to use sort of broadband SCDs, combining as much ASCAP bandwidth as they can. Other science projects will benefit more probably from things like cross-matching with the VLA sky survey in the overlap region to get the higher resolution. So I think we're kind of in this exciting era where there's like a wealth of data, and we just need to make sure that the larger team members are aware of sort of everything that's going to become available. And, you know, as sort of survey leadership goes, I think it's kind of our role to facilitate access to those data products, you know, whether that be like documentation and tutorials or MOUs or whatnot, like, you know, just kind of providing that sort of information conduit is going to be really important.
Yeah. I'm asking in part because, you know, as you know, for polarization, you want to get as much frequency coverage as possible. And so, you know, it will be, for us, I think it's worthwhile to plan ahead for, you know, using, you know, frequency coverage in both regions of the ASCAP spectrum if we can. So I'm just wondering there must be some degree of alignment, you know, with our thinking on those matters, I would guess.
Yeah. Something that I was just reminded of was, have you looked closely into this issue of the online continuum averaging at the lower frequency tunings? Is that something where with like high RMs or something you're gonna suffer from having 1 megahertz channels instead of something narrower, or is that acceptable even down at the lowest, like 700 megahertz?
Yeah, I think 1 megahertz is still fine for most sources down at, you know, maybe in like the galactic center region or something, or really exceptional sources, we'd be missing some, you know, substantial sensitivity on sources with high RMs. But I think the nominal rotation measure where you lose 50% of sensitivity from bandwidth smearing with 1 megahertz channels is like 3,500 ratings per meter squared or something like that, deriving from the 750 megahertz end. So that's certainly suitable for just about everything in the sky, I think. And I think, in fact, for at least for some of the testing, we're talking about doing 4 megahertz channels because we can give up some of that RM range, actually. But I think that this has to be discussed in the larger team and make sure so that we can make sure that, you know, the back of the envelope calculations are consistent with the science aims that the team have. But, you know, so just take those numbers that I quoted as sort of indicative.
Okay, that sounds pretty positive, though. Yeah, and I hope I answered your question. I mean, we don't have science cases that are relying on the on data outside this band, I guess, the way maybe some of the studies that you had in mind for polarization would really need more of a lever arm and frequency, but we certainly we'll want to take advantage of extra continuum data that's available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mean, the most extreme position that we could take within POSSUM going forward is that, you know, the POSSUM survey will retain commensality or co-observation, say, with both EMU and Wallaby, despite the fact that, you know, EMU and Wallaby have split in frequency, right? Whether that would actually go through the TAP or not is perhaps debatable, but, you know, it's a stance that we could decide to take within POSSUM.
Yeah, and I think the more we discuss these things, also the feeling I get is that sort of commensality in the sense that both SSTs are sort of, you know, negotiating and compromising on survey parameters versus sort of piggybacking is an interesting thing to keep aware of too. I think EMU is very happy to piggyback on surveys like Flash and Wallaby if we can, you know, achieve what we're proposing here in this sort of lower middle band. Whereas I feel like a couple of years ago, the conversation was getting very complicated when about, you know, how several SSTs need to come to an agreement about how to compromise on parameters that they may have very different science requirements driving. Yeah, it would be nice if we could work out a way where no one was really compromised too much in terms of the data that is made available to them for an observation that they were not, you know, completely driving, but I think these things will work out.
Great. Any other questions or comments for Josh?
Can I ask a quick question? Josh, just want to confirm that this frequency coverage you mentioned, 840 to 1128 megahertz, it's only for the pilot survey, or EMU for the proper survey would also be most likely?
Yeah, that's correct. That is our currently our nominal coverage for the full EMU survey.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
I have a question, Josh.
Yeah.
Maybe because I missed prior discussions during this VC week. How is this tiling strategy? Is it different or the same as that of the racks?
Yeah, I think it's generated with fundamentally the same script. So, you know, Rax is free to choose using the same script that generates all the tiles necessary to observe the entire sky below plus 30 deck. You have command line options like the shape of the footprint and the pitch angle and the frequency tuning, and that determines details like where the transition between the polar quasi-rectangular region and the strip region occurs, and the number of tiles per constant declination row and things like that. Also the ability to turn on and off interleaving. So I think fundamentally Rax is using the same strategy, just with driving it with different input parameters.
Okay. And another question is, you spoke of a second pilot. Is this something that's happening?
It's been suggested that if the first pilot is successful, that some time could be asked for to carry out another similar set of observations of different kind of different conditions, different part of the sky. I mean, if I remember correctly, the pilot was originally like 400 hours, and then we all got chopped down to 100 anyways. So these things are constantly in flux, I think, but it's certainly something we're interested in asking for once we can demonstrate, you know, successful observation of this first region. And again, this region, this would eventually, I think, just be 100 square degrees of the full EMU survey. I don't see a distinction really between the pilot here and the full survey. I kind of just see this as starting to start the full thing, unless there's any really dramatic changes that we would benefit from observing this area again with like different hardware or, you know, different firmware or something.
And one more question. Is it more important for EMU to get data now, like as soon as possible, versus waiting so that the SPT field can be observed at night? Is it more urgent to get data now, or is it actually fine for Yimmy also to wait? I would just like to get a better feeling of where this decision is leaning towards.
Yeah, I mean, what we really want is to understand whether we can do the full survey during the day. Incredible if it says my internet connection is unstable. It would be regrettable if the data quality during the day was remarkably different than at night, and we were, you know, motivated to carry out the entire survey at night. That would start to be pretty infeasible in terms of the number of years it would take and such. So I think it's important to demonstrate that things are okay during the day within some constraints. And I'm optimistic that could be true. So that being said, you know, we want the data quality from the pilot to be representative of what we expect from the full survey. So if it's acceptable during the day within these constraints, then I think by definition that means it will be representative of the full survey, and there's no need to wait and make it a little better by observing at night. But if it's a lot worse, then we're going to need to better understand the observing constraints and how to conduct daytime observations at high sensitivity. And I think some iteration will need to be required before we can really call the pilot a success. So that, I mean, this 100 hours, you know, based on previous experiences of this nature, right? I really do expect some amount of iteration may be necessary to produce something that is meeting the science requirements.
And these test daytime observations, they are being requested and being observed?
Yeah, that's my understanding.
Okay.
I haven't received any conclusive results, but I need to follow up with a couple people about the status of that. I think that the test observations are really to confirm this cone of acceptable solar angles that's been put into, you know, reported in one of these beta memos. And so if the interference is mitigated and, you know, other parameters like, you know, T-sys remains acceptably low and things like that, then I don't see any reason why daytime would really be a problem. Maybe there's things I'm not thinking of, like airplanes or something. I don't know. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, thanks.
Look, we want to get this first area of sky, you know, to something that would be acceptable for the full survey, and whether that means, you know, trying different things during the day until we can, you know, make that happen or not, I don't really know what the answer is yet. But certainly the hope is that you know, we've observed a lot during the day, and do people have a feeling for whether it's like, you know, similar to a long track at night, or?
Do
you want to say?
It's likely that the gamma 23 field, Josh, was observed throughout daytime. Emil and I were just looking at whether CASTA has that data already or not. If it is, we will request you to have a look on the images.
Yeah, absolutely. And it would be good to, if it was daytime, it would be good to look up things like maybe if the OMP could like tell us what the solar angles were, or if we could simulate that somehow, so that we could understand if that was within the current sort of set of recommendations.
Good. All right. Maybe we should, unless there's another burning question or comment, maybe we should move on to the pilot survey portion, the possum pilot survey portion, that is. Thanks, Josh. Many thanks for that. And could you send your slides to me? Because we've been posting the presentations on the wiki. Great. Thank you. Right. So, Anne, do you want to take over from there?
Yes. First, apologies for not being able to join BusyWeek remotely this time, because it's really not the optimal time for European participants. So I for the talks that have been posted, I've just taken a look, but I will catch up also listening to the recordings. Thank you, Josh, for sticking with this plan of having the EMU discussion right before the pilot discussion. I think it's very optimal that you are here. And if you could stay around for a little bit, if we have some questions, then it will be very easy for you to address. And if you are too sleepy, just feel free to just go. It's getting very late there. Okay, so just a recap of the current thinking of possum pilot is that we would do the same fields as EMU, but going mid-frequency band. And the purpose of the pilot is to evaluate the low and mid-band polarization performance for considering the full survey strategy. And with low and mid-band of the same fields, we have this added value of analyzing the joint frequency band together for maximum lambda square coverage. So there are still quite a number of outstanding issues for the observing parameters and sort of the boundary conditions for possum or polarization observations. One of them is the scheduling constraint. In the observing guide, it has been suggested that possum should go with nighttime observations to avoid ionospheric ferret irritation or minimize ionospheric ferret irritation. So we have sent Aiden an email about requesting test observations to address this. So I guess I have a couple of questions for the investigation of ionospheric ferret irritation. This is with the existing commissioning data. Can we already, is it possible to already make some statements about nighttime, daytime observation differences in effects of ferret, ionospheric ferret irritation? And the second question is, if we were to request test observations, what kind of test observations should we actually request? What field in particular, and what time during the day or night?
I can address this a little bit.
Yeah.
And we can continue discussions. It's Craig, by the way. So that was put in the guide, sort of as a bit of a hedge. And, it's all things being equal, better that we observe at night, and that sort of, takes one more variable out of the equation. But the fact of the matter is we're right in the middle of solar minimum right now. We can't even detect ionospheric ferret irritation in our data yet. We've got some observations that are hopefully going to kick off soon, where we'll get joint MWA and ASCAP tracking of a particular polarized source. The MWA should be able to provide very high RM precision on that to know whether we will indeed, whether we can expect to actually see the effect or not at all in the ASCAP data, or whether it's just going to be below the noise. So, I think at the moment,
you know, in terms of IFR, it probably doesn't matter too much whether we're during the day or night time or somewhere in between. But, you know, it will soon start to matter on the time scale of, you know, maybe a year or something like that. We're in a tricky spot at the moment where we're trying to understand how to detect and correct for this effect that doesn't really exist at the moment. So,
right.
As far as we can tell.
So for the purpose of pilot survey, then it really, at the moment, does not matter whether we go night or daytime. And
I think the bigger concern would be like, you know, basically mirror that of EMU, you know, whether you know, solar interference will hurt our imaging to any significant extent. And as far as I'm aware, those observations are being pursued, but not looked at all yet, is my understanding. But I'm not really involved in it yet. I was intending to get involved once the data were in the bag, as it were.
So it sounds like we also need to evaluate how the solar interference affect polarization measurements. So looking at the same test data that EMU has requested, but in polarization.
Yeah, I think it'd be sensible to do. I'm not sure, you know, whether we expect any polarization specific effects beyond just general corruption of the data or not. But yeah, I think we should definitely look at the data and try and look for anything that looks untoward. So yeah, I guess the summary, the upshot of that is that, you know, we can go with whatever field, you know, from our point of view, EMU decide to choose or not, for probably the same reasons, I would say. We probably don't have to worry about IFR too much.
Okay. That's good to know.
But it will be a consideration, like, going forward on longer timescales, like beyond the pilots into the full surveys and that sort of thing. Like, we'll have to get a correction in place for it. Sorry, Watson, you're going
to... This is getting back to Josh. There's some good news, Josh. So this data that was observed during daytime, Gamma 23 field, is on CASDA in the unreleased state, but you should have access to it. So if you logged in with your Opal ID, you should be able to get 8132, the SBID 8132 on CASDA. It's waiting to be validated. So it'll be really great if you could have a look and let us know.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you.
Yep. So it sounds like there's no, so getting back to the atmospheric Faraday rotation, there's no need to request additional test observations at the moment. And so hopefully the solar interference test data and the joint MWA SCAP observations will be able to address, at least for the time being, how we're going to be affected by the sun.
Yes, I think so. We may want to propose some test observations off the back of those results, but I think that's where it's at the moment. I think that's what we need to do next. So.
So the second point that's crucial for POSM is off-axis leakage. And I see that this leakage has been a main task for the busy week. I'm just wondering if there's any progress in actually quantifying the dependence of leakage on the footprint choice.
As far as I'm aware, not so much on, like, we haven't got to the stage of being able to make statements about which footprint choice would be better for us or worse.
Right.
We're getting there.
We're sort of getting there, yeah. So,
okay.
You know, people have been quantifying the off-axis leakage in various different ways into the linears and circular polarizations. And yes, I expect soon we'll be able to say something about which footprint choice will suit us best. But yeah, my suspicion is that, you know, it's not going to make a huge difference.
Right.
The biggest factor is the beam pitch, probably. You know, we don't want a huge beam pitch, and 0.9 is good for us, especially in the low frequency band. And then between square 6x6 and 6 and close pack, I mean, there will be some effects there that we'll have to correct for, I'd say, but they'll be there in both cases. Anyway, that's just my feeling. You know, we're going to actually work towards quantifying that, obviously. But, yeah.
But again, this is not, as you have said last time, it's not a deal breaker we'll be able to manage.
Yeah, so I think, you know, the off-axis leakage is going to have to be corrected one way or the other in, like, post-processing. There's just no way that will be incorporated into the pipeline processing on the timescale of the pilots or anything like that. So,
yeah,
I think based on what we've seen so far, nothing's going to be a deal-breaker for us, and we're just going to have to work to find the best strategy once we have the data in some sense.
Yep.
Or use existing data sets, yeah.
Right. So another related issue is this ripple level, given the pitch of 0.9 at the mid-frequency band. So I already emailed Dave to ask him if he has any quantification of the expected ripple level, but I think in the I think in the observing guide, all the plots were given for the optimal beam pitch, not a particular pitch value, but rather the pitch that optimizes the survey speed. So that's why we don't have that information until now. But the feeling in general is that 0.9 will be fine for the mid-frequency band. Does anybody have a better feeling?
I think for the survey speed point of view and minimizing the sensitivity ripple, that seems to be true. But I think off-axis leakage-wise, it needs to be investigated. We haven't quite studied the off-axis properties for these pitches in detail yet.
Right. Okay.
So, and that's the mid band that would be after interleaving?
I think there is also some deliberation. We are hoping that RATS will teach us a lot. Interleaving has other overheads in processing, as you may be aware. It'll lead to an immense, I mean, the number of interleaves will directly lead to increase in image products. So, let's say that, Emil, do you want to say something concrete on this? Because I think there is still some interplay that we could do to optimize data size as well as, you know, service speeds with a combination of interleaves and footprint pitch.
Yeah, I think it's probably too early to tell.
Yeah.
We have to run the test before we can say anything definitively.
I think RATS will teach us a lot on this.
Yeah, if I understand the figure correctly from the observing guide, we can expect about a 20% ripple at 1300 megahertz for square 6x6 with a pitch around 0.9. Which seems pretty high. And with interleaving, it drops to something hard to measure, like a couple percent.
Yeah, 20% is pretty big.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Close-spec 36 also gives at least 15% sensitivity ripple. So.
Yeah, it's certainly much smaller with close pack. Yeah, I don't know. The one of the interesting suggestions that I liked from a while ago was that if one was going to do interleaving, one could actually schedule two separate observations, you know, a long track at the A and the B position separately, so that you were not actually nodding back and forth. So, you know, like basically do it on two consecutive days and then eventually combine the data. That doesn't save you like the memory overhead and other problems with having twice as many images, but it certainly made a lot of sense in terms of other arguments. So I don't know, just something.
I mean, if you combine images, probably it would still be plausible to do what you suggested, leaving LinMOS to be done probably at the end of the survey.
Yeah, it has some trade-offs, like, you know, each of those twice as many images is only root 2 as sensitive, so deconvolution is shallower, and you could imagine that leaving behind a bit more on clean flux or something, if that's an issue. I don't know, once you get up above, I don't know, like 1200 megahertz, like you either really need to dial down the pitch or add these interleaves to flatten out the sensitivity.
So I think this will also be something that MU will have to put their foot down, saying survey speed versus acceptability based on your sensitivity ripple. What would be acceptable and what would not?
Yeah, some of our use cases are driven by the ability to detect sources across the whole sky at a sort of limiting sensitivity. So if a patch of sky or, you know, many patches within the footprint has too high of an RMS, then those need to either be masked out or basically they need to be like masked out in some of the analysis, or the entire threshold needs to be raised to match that of the poorest regions. So getting it pretty smooth to begin with is a huge advantage there, I think. That's part of what's driving it for us. You know, some of the large scale structure cosmology type arguments.
So for EMU, the expected ripple level is quite small for the current strategy.
Yeah, we're aiming for, I mean, it really depends a bit how you measure it too. You know, we need a sort of robust definition. So Dave is using the max minus min over mean near the center of the mosaic. I think I've done both sort of the peak to peak and the RMS response of in the like using the either the RMS from a source finder or using the weight image that comes out of LinMOS. But of course the weight image doesn't really take into account correlated noise. So whether it's better or worse than that, I'm not really prepared to say. I think it's better than that. Better than predicted by LinMOS. Correlated noise. Let's think about that. But yeah, we're expecting it to be sub 10%. And if you look at some of the figures in the OBS guide, one of the most concerning things I saw was the figure from some of the early racks data that used a pitch of 1.05. And that data, you can see the regions of horror sensitivity are actually around the boundaries between tiles. So this is starting to become the dominant effect, not the ripple within the tile. So that got me a bit worried. And when I saw the results from the pitch of 0.9, I thought they looked way better. So that was part of our motivation as well, trying to make sure that the regions where the tiles overlap does not cause the total survey depth to suffer.
Are there any existing possum test data from which we can understand both this ripple level and these patterns that might come up between the overlapping tile regions, as Josh has pointed out, for a pitch of 0.9 at mid-band?
Nothing possum specific, I don't think, but there's...
We have the supernova 10/6 data, one with 28 antennas and the other with 36. The one with 28 antennas was with a pitch of 0.6 and in the close pack structure. So it's a very extremely packed footprint. And the other is with a pitch of, I don't remember, but it's not, I think it's 0.9, but the footprint is different, square 6 cross 6. So,
I think there's observations of the LMC and SMC. I'm not sure if they're in mid-band there. They have multiple tiles. I'd have to look into that, Anne.
Yeah, it would be great. Because I think we need some quantification of that. Otherwise,
this is a low band.
So do you have in mind a test specifically for the effect on polarization in particular, or are you just meaning just for the frequency band, that for the mid band and for a pitch of 0.9, say? What's the generic effect on all of the data?
Yeah, that's it.
Yep. Yep, okay, I'll try and find something for that.
Thank you. Moving on. So I think every time we had the discussion whether or not possum has any other preferred field choice rather than the field that Emu has suggested. And so far, really nothing obvious have come up, and during the last pilot survey telecom, Ettore has suggested that nonetheless, no matter which part of the southern sky we are observing, one can always compare polarized sources in the field, at least the brighter ones, with the ATCA S-pass RMs. That has a source density about 1 source per 5 square degrees. So if we have 200-300 square degrees for the pilot survey area, there will be 50 or so sources in the field with these S-pass RMs covering 1-3 gigahertz. So we will nonetheless have some ways of doing some polarization beta verification or validation. I think this is also true for Rex. But do people have any other thoughts about the polarization verification side of things for the pilot survey? Are there any fields that we have been missing so far, potentially from fields that have been observed using other instruments that have enough polarization information across a couple hundred square degrees. Maybe we're missing something very, very obvious here, but yeah. If something comes up in your mind, please let me know. Let us know. And there's this compact array SPT field data lying around. One of Ray's students has actually looked at the very preliminary, the polarization aspect of this. So one could also think about reprocessing these compact array SPT data for the possum pilot survey for comparing polarization properties of sources, but it's not clear what the status of the observation of the data is. So I've actually sent Ray an email a couple of weeks ago, but I think he's traveling at the moment. So I'm waiting to hear back. So it may be a lot of effort going into, but maybe getting not a significant number of polarized sources. But since we can already compare these source properties in the pilot field with the SPAS RMs, I don't know how much we'll be gaining. So anyways, any specific thoughts on this?
I guess I can just highlight one thing that I'll be doing shortly, just as a matter of course, which is the Fornax field, which at the moment I'm trying to, I've got the low band data imaged up and the polarization data look very nice, but there's no direct overlap with compact array data, whereas I've got compact array data for the entire field that I wrote up, and RMs for, I think it's about on the order of 150 sources or something, and polarized fractions, obviously. And yeah, the 1.4 gigahertz data for that field as well. So for ASCAP. So at the moment, I'm trying to image that up. There's been a few problems with that, but hopefully we're getting there. So yeah, I'll do that comparison soon, I think.
Yeah. So I think that this Fornax ASCAP data set at the mid band will be more or less enough for polarization verification and like complexity tests, etc. That we don't, do we actually need additional tests is what, I guess, depending on what you find out in your data.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah, sort of hard to say. It may reveal horrendous problems, in which case I expect we'd want to do a lot more observations, or it may look totally fine, in which case we just sort of confirm our suspicions. And yeah, I mean, I guess, there's definitely other tests that we want to do. Sort of the introductory talk, we were talking about the fact that we don't have an absolute angle calibration at the moment. We don't have the IFR correction in. We have no correction for off-axis leakage. So, for all of these things, I think, some of those things will need new observations for sure to assess, but it's kind of hard to say exactly what they'll be at the moment.
Yeah, so for some of these additional items, then the pilot will be a suitable place to address at least some
I think some of the things like maybe the absolute angle cal or whatever won't probably get done in time for the possum pilot, and it might be sort of ad hoc post observing calibration, like post-processing thing that we do. I don't know, maybe there's strongly differing opinions on that, in which case we've got to get into gear.
So one interesting thing that we discussed a lot in the beginning of data validation was sort of the utility of kind of the self-consistency of the ASCAP data as its own sort of measure of the instrumental performance versus what we were calling external validation, which is like, you know, looking for ATCA catalogs and things like that. And I think it hasn't fully been completely explored, the ability to really look for self-consistency within the ASCAP data. Using interleaving is going to mean that the mosaic pattern is highly oversampled, you know, more than Nyquist. So within the primary, within the half power point of the primary beam for any given source, any given source will probably be within the half power of several different beams. And looking at the restored properties of that source with each beam processed separately, you know, should recover comparable source properties, you know, flux, spectral index, position, polarization properties. And I really feel like there's really a treasure trove of information to be exploited here in an analysis of, you know, a handful of selected sources across the mosaic, and then following them up with the sort of per beam restored properties for all the beams that image them. In the absence of a strong, trustworthy, like standard candle external data set, I feel like, I mean, this is worth doing in any case, I think, but it's almost, to me, you know, more important to make sure that these results kind of check out than that the mosaic image matches some external value.
Yeah, I agree. We're starting to do that for polarization specific stuff right at the moment. In fact, this week people have been working on different aspects of it, but yeah, I agree that it should be a sort of all-encompassing effort.
Yeah, there's just so much information there, and it'll tell you like where we're making the errors and stuff, I think. So, yeah,
it'll be good. Instrumental validate itself, damn it.
That's right.
Right. Let's see. If we were to be fully conventional with EMU, at this mid-frequency band, do we spend the same amount of time per block as EMU, or do we want to go slightly deeper because of the possible spectral index effects? Or is it more or less negligible in comparing EMU?
That's a tough one. Yeah, I guess some sort of complex trade-off between the polarization fraction tending to rise a bit towards higher frequencies and the spectral index is dropping. So,
yeah. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure if there's like an obvious thing to do there a priori. I'm not sure if anyone else knows. I mean, the Fornax field might inform this a little bit because we've got data in both bands, so, you know, we could sort of try to understand, you know, if we're trying to get like the same polarized intensity in the two different bands or something, what we'd have to shoot for roughly.
Right. Yeah, it'd be good. if we can have, yeah, if we can learn something from the Phronix blowing wood bank comparisons.
Right, I'll add it to the list.
Yeah, so these are more or less the observational specifications for a pilot survey. Is there any specific aspects that we are missing? So I think there are several more urgent things that we need to find out. One is that what we had talked about just now, the observing time per block, comparing, low and mid band. Second of all is the pitch angle of 0.9, the expected ripple level and the artifacts in the overlapping regions of the fields. And that information I already sent a request to Dave to see if we can find out, and perhaps there's something that we can learn from the test observations already. Craig will take a look at it. And yes, so I think these are the two main things from the observational side of planning the pilot survey. Then we have a whole list of processing and post-processing related issues to resolve for the Possum pilot. But they are not too urgent, but I think we need to find out what the status of the different processing components are, understand what specifications we would use to do the imaging and like the weighting schemes, channel widths, and the smoothing, and how the data ingestion is going to happen. Is it going to happen automatically already for the pilot from to CASTA to the, there are so many acronyms, to the CADC, is that correct? And whether or not just this processing end-to-end will still be somewhat not fully automatic, but some parts need to be performed by hand. So maybe we have a couple of minutes left. We can talk briefly about this now.
One thing that I think hasn't been mentioned a whole lot that we're going to need to, more common, I guess, than anything, but we're definitely going to have to factor in for the Possum pilot if we're at 1.4 gigahertz, is that straight away we lose half the band. And so that's obviously going to affect our sensitivity and the time required on source, which is, sort of goes back to what you're talking about before. So,
yes. Yes. Yeah. One thing I skipped over is that George mentioned last time that the usual sustainable bandwidth will be 150 megahertz as opposed to the full bandwidth, which is 288. More or less half of the band is lost.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah. Yeah, so.
Yeah, there's nothing to be done about it either. It's just shift the band a little bit, maybe, but. Other than that, it's going to have to factor it into the
sensitivity
calculator or whatever.
Yeah.
I suppose an interesting test that could be done by combining the EMU, the low band and the high band data from this pilot is if a future split frequency mode became available and you had 150 in the upper clean region centered on, 13 something, and another 150 megahertz down below that big patch of RFI, what kind of data analysis could you get from that? You know what I mean? If this if this mode became available in like a year from now or so, like how attractive would that be?
Yeah. I'd say it'd be quite attractive. Just offhand.
Yeah, but still, yeah. But still, with the chunk of area by basically taking away this lambda square coverage. So there's some implication also on the RMSF shape. Even though the sensitivity is now better, but the lambda square coverage cannot be recovered fully. Yeah.
I remember Cormac did a very nice simulation back when we were trying to decide about the broadband early science frequency tunings and gaps and the effect of a gap put in different places side lobes of the arm spread function or something. Maybe it's possible to resurrect some of that to do a comparison.
Yeah. All right. So I guess along the lines of that point, are there any other important details that have been missed so far in the possum panel discussion?
I mean, maybe some things about calibration requirements. I mean, can I just ask, is the on-axis leakage strategy, like, is that a done deal? Is it just involves some observations with rotated paths and things like that?
Yeah, we don't need to do that anymore because Aaron Chippendale's got this algorithm that can essentially form the X and Y and Y beams with zero phase now. It's a function of frequency, so it seems to be a few little issues possibly there where it may have introduced some ripple into the band, which is something Aaron's looking at, possibly due to like a path dish reflection cavity effect, I think. But apart from that, once that's done and then we solve for the leakages on 1934, the data look pretty good. We're making some assessments of that at the moment, actually, and there seems to be a few strange discrepancies between the numbers for the leakage that different people have been reporting. But yeah, hopefully we can nail that down. I think broadly speaking, the on-axis strategy is not going to be a problem, but yeah, there's definitely questions about how we do the off-axis corrections.
What about time on source for 1934? Is that do you need more time typically than we've been getting? Do you need more time than EMU needs for signal to noise on D terms or something like that?
Yeah, no, we seem to be getting good solutions just with what we've got, basically. I think it's bright enough that it's not a problem, really.
So I think the leakage is less than 0.3%, if that's what you wanted to know, Josh, with 3 or 4 minute observations on 934.
Okay, and you just need a single scan?
Yeah. Whatever's done to the beamforming, basically, just gives us what we need for the leakages. The band pass.
Do you think there's any utility in using calibration scans both before and after the field is observed and looking for stability or looking to interpolate something, or is it very stable?
I think the grand goal would be to use the ODC to correct the gains in the course of observation. The drift is not that high. There is a drift in 12 hours, but I think that the idea is to correct it with the ODC.
And the sky model.
Of course.
Ultimately
with the sky model.
Yes, good question.
Sorry. I have a related question. The sign of Q and U, they are all fixed now. The problem is that we are having.
Nope.
I will soon present the documentation on what to look for and where are the sources of ambiguities. So just shortly here, you know that the dish itself on ASCAP can be rotated. So depending on what orientation of the dish you choose to observe, there could be this one overall ambiguity between the sky definition of Stokes and the instrumental Stokes. So all you get currently is Stokes parameters defined on the instrument. And the translation of Q and U to sky would require just the knowledge of the initial configuration of the rotation, basically, this rotation and the footprint. So the data should be there in the metadata. And anyway, it's not that complicated. I will write a brief note clarifying this issue once and for all.
Thanks.
Just making a point that it's the instrumental frame, not the sky frame.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yep, so I think we are running out of time. But there's one thing that I think would be very useful to start drafting is basically the list of tests beyond the scope of the test that we are already doing on the commissioning and test data that we would like to do with the pilot survey data. So things like RN validation, polarization, absolute polarization, angle validation, complexity, sensitivity, comparing between the low and mid band, polarized source count, comparison, and how, for example, resolution over the band would change things for us. So these are some possible examples of tests that we would like to do. And I will start this list on the Python Pilot Wiki so that people can add onto that list of these specific tests. And of course, there's one other thing is, possibly investigating the different off-axis polarization calibration strategies with the pilot. So I think if there's no other points to be made, then we can wrap up the pilot discussion. I will put some notes on the wiki from this discussion. Thank you, Josh, for staying until the end.
And thank you for joining so early, Anne, as well.
Yeah.
Oh, no worries.
Trust us, it's a bit rough for us as well. It's 4:30 now, so
yeah.
We'll have to be off soon.
It's pretty terrible.
It's a little bit windy outside as well, so it might be a bit cold walking home. Sorry.
You can only take it so far, I think.
Okay. Thanks, guys. I sent you some slides. I hopefully went through.
Yep, they're already posted, actually. Thank you.
Sweet. All right. Cool. Yeah, send me any follow-up questions or anything, and I'm happy to get back to it. And I'll take a look at those gamma data and see if we can't make some decisions about daytime observing.
If you have issues logging in, please let us know. Aiden would be able to put you back on, but your Opal ID should work ideally.
Perfect. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Okay, so we're going to now transition to doing a wrap-up of the day, basically. So, you know, people should definitely, if you're either up very late or up very early, feel free to go. we're just going to wrap up what we've done today.
Okay, I'm going to duck out. Cheers, guys.
All right, see you, Josh.
See you, Josh.
Bye, Josh.
See you, Josh.
I'll stick around for 10 more minutes, and then I have another telecom to run to.
Okay, great, Anne. And you should feel free to go as well. It's like you're sort of poised and ready to go. As you're on the way out, I'll say I'm now doing the same leakage plots now, but for every beam, like beam zero from all footprints stacked, beam one from all footprints stacked, etc. And I think going to increasing beam numbers, there's more sources showing leakage and with higher amplitude.
Yeah.
So I think the center of the footprint is better.
Yeah,
I think it's still in progress.
I'll have to think tomorrow.
If that doesn't pan out, maybe I'll try to reprocess it with, I have to copy it all over again, but try to reprocess it with Q and U.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
See, V, sorry.
Well, it would be, yeah. Okay. Good.
Yeah.
No, let's see what this does.
See you tomorrow.
Yeah, see you tomorrow. Thanks. All right. So should we start with you, Craig?
Yep.
What news?
What news? All right. The Fornax data still looks crap, but that's because I realized that there was a problem applying the gain tables to the data in the self-cal loops, so it wasn't actually getting self-calibrated. I'm an idiot. So that is now imaging up, and I expect to be able to make some more definitive statements, hopefully positive ones, on how the data look soon. So yeah, imaging up as we speak. In parallel, I've been working on my off-axis multi-nest leakage surface fitter and have just got that going. So it returns results that are broadly consistent with the much sort of simpler linear least squares fit that I was doing before. So this is still at this point a fit to just the multi-frequency synthesis images, whereas now I'm hoping to expand that into a fully three-dimensional fit, incorporating the frequency dependence of the primary beams to the Stokes Q and U data. So everything seems to be in place for that now. I'm just gonna take it forward. So yeah, that's where it's at.
Sweet. Okay. What I'm working on is looking at leakage patterns from different beams from RAC's test data. There's some sort of summary plots that I've just added into Slack, which you can look at in the Busy Days channel. What I'm doing now is running through and producing the same plots, but for each beam separately. There's 39 footprints in this test observation. And so for a given beam number out of the footprint, say beam zero, I'm plotting all 39 versions of that beam. And that seems to be showing patterns which are, so far it's still running through, but actually seems to be showing very, very clear patterns per beam, actually. And I think with decreasing quality as you go to larger beam numbers, which corresponds roughly to further out in the path, I think. So I think there's going to be some interesting patterns we can see here.
I've been working on things that are needed to be done to put some of the image products on CASDA. So basically some polarization products, all the polarization products onto CASDA. So that's a fix which I am introducing in the pipeline. Have made progress in terms of writing the codes. The tools are there, waiting for Galaxy now to produce the images, and then I'll be able to test my tools and hopefully make it ready for CASDA.
Good.
So I have working mostly a parallelized version of our own clean, just attempting to get that going on some Craig's Fornax data. So I'm just running 3D RM synthesis on that, and that's going pretty well. And just other some bug fixes for RM tools along the way. And now getting that going with parallelized RM clean. On some mock data, I had a really good speed up to some, like, you know, essentially a 2D array spectra. It scaled really nicely with the number of cores, which is really nice.
Cool.
Other thing I've been working on is just a quick tool to help visualize some of the large cubes quickly, just so you can see, like, are there sources here? You know, does this make sense?
Nice.
What AstroPy is claiming to memmap the arrays, but for some reason is then, when it plays with NumPy, tries to read them into memory.
Let's talk about that tomorrow.
Yeah, so, hopefully we can get that sorted, and then it worked well on the individual beans when I tried to put a full Linmos mosaic in it, fell over with a memory error. But hopefully we can work on fixing that. So success so far today, for the most part.
Excellent.
Cool. I took the four beams that we copied across to the Strumware server yesterday, cross-matched them with NVSS, didn't yet check for things that are the same source in two beams, but I will get to that. Ignoring duplicates, 57 things don't turn up in NVSS at all. That's a low bound. I did a fairly liberal bound of 60 arc seconds. There's a few things that are clearly two components in racks that are one component in VSS, which is a surprise. I plotted the peak fluxes against each other and they correlate, yay, and fixed the offset problem from before.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it was the convolution.
Oh.
I blame Alec entirely. I applied a very dodgy primary beam correction that I need to check with someone who actually knows what they're doing, but it does seem to do the trick, and I get a nice looking correlation plot, so that's great. Although we do seem to be getting less flux than NVSS still.
Mm.
I can get the median offsets and things like that. So, like, we're off by like half an arc second. Half an arc second in declination and about an arc second in RA on median.
Mm.
So that's what I've done. I've only looked at the eye because it's easier. But I'll take a look at the QU tomorrow.
Okay.
The squish queue.
Good. Okay. Very good. So lots of progress today, I think.
Yeah.
Everybody, please make sure to put a couple notes into the spreadsheet on your task, please, before we go. Neeraj, how about yourself? Are you going to be asking a question of Craig now?
No, I've just been observing people working remotely that way. I guess there will be some stuff tomorrow, right, Craig? That's what I gather from.
Yeah. There will be. It's imaging up now, so yeah.
So what I would do is that probably just get together with Alec, depending on his convenience, and then we can try to work on this post-busy week. Mostly, I think that's how it will happen,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah.
I think we should definitely keep working on this. I'd love to do so. Yeah, it's a priority for me, working on this field and understanding it. So yeah, that'd be great.
Good. And Anne, I presume that you don't have any news to report?
Nope.
Okay. Would you like a task?
I have just completed one task.
Oh, yeah, good. Well done. That's true. That's true you have, haven't you?
Touché.
Excellent. Okay, good. Well, I think everything's going quite well. Right, we'll be online for another 15 minutes or so probably before we start to filter away. But so we'll just stay online for now, but that probably pretty much wraps it up for today, I think.
Okay, I'll sign off now. Bye everyone.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks, Neeraj. And thank you, Anne, as well.
Thank you. I also sign up now. Bye.
Okay, bye.
This is doing my schnitzel in.
A pretty good point to end today, I think, for me.
Awesome.
It's really neatly wrapped up.
Can you show me the plot?
Absolutely.
DOS plot.
You can.
I'm going to hang up the call.
Tell me all about it.